So welcome everyone. I know I think we last met in February. And I don't know that we've got a full hour and a half worth of stuff here today, but if we get time back, we get time back. You know, I think really the last few meetings we've had, we spent a lot of time talking about the No Surprises Act. Part of the reason we delayed our last meeting is, you know, we were hoping to get some additional feedback in that first month or two of this year, just in terms of what people are seeing in terms of qualified payment amounts, any issues with if you're using ClearHealth or another vendor, and how that process is working from an operation standpoint. And then if anyone's had the pleasure of going through the independent dispute resolution process yet. So that's kind of where I wanted to start this off, is just, you know, get another update, I guess, because really when we met in February, it was just still too early to have a lot of feedback on that. And I can tell you from a network health standpoint, we have not gone through an independent dispute resolution process yet. We have not had any pushback. We've had quite a few claims where we are paying at a qualified payment amount for claims that qualify under the No Surprises Act, but we have not received pushback. At least as of last week, we have not seen anybody file, to go to arbitration for what they were paid. So I'm curious if anyone else has gone through that, just if it's gone well, if it hasn't gone well, what's not going well. If anyone's experienced IDR, I'd love to hear how that went. Personally, I've got a radiology group I'd love to term, but I want to see how the IDR process works first. So I'll open it up to the floor if I had more feedback for you. And maybe we're still too early, but I'd be curious, you know, if anyone's had any experiences or they'd like to share.
So if anyone would like to share anything, just unmute your mic and feel free to jump into the conversation.
A quick question, is the IVR process even open? Do they have it?
No. No, they don't. This is Sarah. We have not had any IDRs yet. Anything go through IDR, so.
Neither has courts.
This is Cindy at Cox. We have not had any either.
Might have to go to QPAs for everything until somebody finally pushes back.
Well, is that process even set up to where it can effectively be, you know, applied for? The providers just holding back a bunch of stuff because it's still early in the year, or is there administrative elements that have prevented them from filing it?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything on the latter in terms of, like, you know, the issues with the portal to actually file the dispute. I haven't heard anything on that.
Yeah.
I think what you said in terms of perhaps waiting and holding and then submitting them, because typically what I'm assuming they're going to want to submit these in batch, right? You're not going to want to do these on a claim by claim basis. So that could certainly be what's happening here. And, you know, there is a timeline for every step. So we just may not have gotten to that timeline where, you know, we've got notification yet, but it doesn't sound like anyone else has had issues yet. I guess no news is good news, but maybe it's just too early yet.
This is Cindy at Health Plans. And my understanding is they have to go through the open negotiation before they submit the IDR. From our perspective, our first NSA claim was paid in, I can't remember the exact date, it was mid to late February. So they're getting close to exhausting their 30 business days, which would be roughly about 45 calendar days. But I haven't even had anybody come through our open negotiation process either.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is if there's negotiation, if the providers have started negotiating yet.
Yeah, we have not seen that. They've accepted everything we've submitted. You know, so far we started submitting claims in January. So, you know, I would have thought we'd have seen something by now.
I agree. We have the same situation. We haven't had any, and we've processed over 1,000 claims at this point at QPA since January. I'm wondering too, a lot of them so far have been hospital-based versus facility. providers. So in those cases, some of the providers, you know, if they have outside billing being done, if they're not even aware of it on their end, because it's a significant decrease for them.
Okay. Well, I think we'll just kind of have this as kind of an ongoing topic as we get more information, probably in our next meeting in July. You know, I'm sure we'll have more up to date or more experiences by then, but I appreciate everyone's feedback on that. I don't know, Rick, are you going to talk about the data analysis?
Sure, Scott, thanks. Yeah, so on this one, and Gina and may want to chime in as well, but she and I and Cara, who's the lead on this, had a conversation this week on it, and Cara's not able to join us today. And so essentially we'll postpone this conversation until next time. But just to give you a heads up, our conversation was very productive. We talked about, as you recall, just to go back for a second, Cara made an excellent presentation at our last meeting on the aggregated claims data that they had at that point for 2021 calendar year. And with an eye towards looking at some of the top providers that we all are repricing claims with. And what we talked about is ways in which that data could be made more useful, both with respect to sort of a reactive mode. As you know, many of you and quite frequently have mentioned this sort of egregious biller issue and how to address that. And of course, to the extent that these aggregated data can tell us even more than your own individual plans data about who those sort of problematic providers might be, and then of course what might be done about it. And then in a proactive mode, we talked about a couple of things. And one is, taking the data and adding to what's already there, not only the volume, dollar volume of claims that these top providers have with all of us, but how many plans are repricing claims with that provider? Because to the extent that a provider might be problematic and have a large claim volume flowing through it, that might be essentially an issue for a single plan, or it could be an issue for many plans. So that's something that we want to pursue, and I think to good effect. And then lastly, I'll say, and this leads into the next discussion that we talked about, the possibility of using the data set that they have, the aggregated data set, to start to identify procedure, service codes, and other ways that we can look for, bundled claim opportunities to bring that into focus. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. So let me set it aside and just see, in with respect to the aggregated claims data, Gina or anybody else from First Health, is there anything that you'd like to add? Understanding that we'll come back to this at the next meeting when Cara rejoins us.
No, I think you captured everything, Rick, that we kind of talked about yesterday, is looking at the data, not only at an aggregate level, but also looking at the data, even at the client level, which, you know, the clients that are First Health receive data quarterly, annually, sometimes monthly, dependent on what their needs are. But we might need to start digging a little bit deeper in. And I know one of the topics we kind of talked about yesterday is possibly digging deeper in and looking at some of this data, maybe based on an episode of care type, rather than just looking at a specific provider. I know you mentioned procedure code at a procedure code level, but Cara had recommended possibly going more deeper into looking at it broader at the episode of care. So we would be interested in seeing what the members would want. Would you want it us to look at it more at an episode of care? And if so, what types are going to be critical for you to look at. Is it like knee or hip, or there's specific different types that you would want us to look at? And then we can use that information and kind of dig deeper.
So let me add on to that, and then we'll open it up for discussion. So Scott, we're kind of leading into the next agenda item, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. Yep.
Okay. So at the last meeting, Scott, I believe it was, that brought up the whole idea of bundled payments and what First Health might partner with us all to address that. And as Gina just sort of queued up there, there is certainly the opportunity with the data we have to identify these episodes of care that are, again, common to many of the plans, with an eye towards a different approach, a bundled payment approach to reimbursement. So, and again, so we'd like to get take your temperature, canvas you all that are on the phone. We have a smaller group today, so which is great because everybody can chime in. Maybe we can just go around, and the questions we'd like you to address as we go around the round table here is sort of your plan's general interest in bundled payments, and then to any specific areas that you're especially interested in, and then thirdly, your capability to and here my own technical understanding of it is limited, but your capability to I guess bundle claims in a fashion that they can be so addressed. So Scott, if you don't mind, we'll ask I don't know what kind of a batting order you want to do here, but just go around to the plans and see what they say. Yep.
Sure. I mean, I can start, and Jaime, if you want to, you know, ask. I don't have a full view of who's all on the call, but I know that we do have a couple of bundled payment arrangements currently. Our model so far, at least with the folks who our contracts are with, is the provider really acts as what I call the general contractor, right? They have basically a separate TIN set up for the bundled provider. We make one bundled payment to that TIN. They bill under that TIN. And then the provider, you know, divvies up all the cash to the anesthesiologist, the therapist, the surgeon. And these are mostly ortho and neuro type procedures. We haven't done it in the cardio space yet. We're in the middle of negotiations and with some GI bundles. But that's how it works right now. Is, you know, it simplifies it from an administrative standpoint in terms of I don't have to disperse all the payments. I think the risk for us, though, and we have to do some back-end audits, is making sure those individual providers aren't billing us separately, so we're double paying, right? So we have to do some back-end audits to make sure we're not paying some of those providers that were already included in the bundled payment. We had a couple examples of that, nothing too major, and it was mostly just education of the billing offices, and we haven't seen that occur after the first few months, but that was something we had to, we didn't have those edits in place. It was kind of a manual effort, so that's kind of where we're at right now. I'll let others kind of jump in.
Scott, question for you. How are the outcomes so far?
Well, see, I struggle a little bit because typically when we've talked with, and we've talked with others about doing something similar, you guys know the providers, they don't want to take a cut. So what ends up happening is the bundle payment's not a whole lot lower than, the sum of the parts, right? So, the savings for us typically is, we get some warranties on readmissions. It obviously takes away some of the risk in terms of the severity of the cases, but, it hasn't been this panacea of huge savings in terms of just going, and part of me thinks it's a lot of it's just kind of a buzzword and, that gives us some savings, but I wouldn't say it really moves the needle a ton. We did it because it was easy to administer given the model we had, and we had, ways to protect ourselves in the back end, but I'd be curious if others are seeing those types of savings. I mean, I think the concept of episodic payments makes sense, but it hasn't been this huge savings for us in terms of reimbursement rates.
Okay, so I'll just call out names and we'll go around here. Sarah, and could each person identify their plan so everybody will recall?
Sure.
Yeah, Sarah, could you go next?
Sure. I'm with Health Alliance Medical Plans. Have not implemented this yet. We are in the process of switching our 30-year-old, it feels like 300 years, but our 30-year-old claim system to Tapestry right now. So that is something that we're looking to do, looking at ortho, gastro, and then eventually women's health and cardiology. So I'll be curious to see what everyone has to say. I guess one of the questions I would have is, you know, as far as being able to manage the episodes of care and keeping everything in network, and, you know, directing those referrals, do you think that you're seeing savings indirectly that way?
I think so. That was a question for the group, and anybody who wants to respond, jump in.
Yeah, sure. I mean, for us, it wasn't
the sites of service too. Oh, sorry,
No, for us, it wasn't a huge issue. I mean, there's definitely some value. It's interesting that for us, because where this particular ortho provider is, they compete with our owners pretty high. So, you know, we had to tread lightly with our owners about this deal. But the fact of the matter is, this group has a very good reputation. You know, it's a beautiful facility. They do, you know, it's a newer facility. Quite honestly, it's nicer than our owner facility. So, you know, it did move some of those procedures out of the hospital into their ASC, which we wanted to do, right? So that was a value. Most of our commercial products are, you know, I think we're 90-95% HMO. So we don't have a lot of point of service, and we don't see a lot of leakage in those products. But it was more about maybe shifting a little bit out of the hospital into the ASC was probably the biggest.
Okay, so moving up the list here, Michael, are you, I think you're with us.
Yeah, I'm here, Rick. So Michael Ballacher from Geisinger. So we've got a couple bundle payment arrangements, primarily with our own health system. Most are around the ortho or the musculoskeletal area. I think it was echoing what Scott had said, is we're not really necessarily seeing savings with them. I think most have been set up from the provider perspective as kind of like a budget neutral standpoint. And the one challenge is having to do kind of the post pay type audits to ensure that we're not getting any claims from the other providers. But we've had them set up probably for a couple of years now. And I can't remember the last time we've seen any new bundle payment arrangements come through. I think most of the ones we've had in place have been probably for a couple of years.
Excellent. Thank you. So Gina, if you have any questions as we go along, of course, jump in. Next up, okay. I have Keith. Keith, are you there? Let's see. Okay, maybe he'll rejoin. How about you, Jeff?
There we go. Thanks, Rick. My experience with bundled payments is not with community care. I'm the financial officer for community care. I don't think community care is ready for that, nor is the community. But previously, running BPCI and CJR programs, again, I'll echo what other people have said. There's not a lot of savings when you design the programs. And actually, the cost of administering it probably eat up any savings that you do realize. And what I've experienced is that just appropriate care management and tracking and care coordination for those people, for those members that, you know, have, you know, surgeries of some sort is more effective than trying to bundle it and put it in some kind of special program and then the cost of administering layered on top of it.
Thanks, Jeff. So we're kind of getting a feeling here that Gina, of not a super enthusiastic interest, but I have a question, and we have a couple more folks to go. But question maybe to add on here is there a distinction that's worth noting between the your home network and your network and your use of First Health with respect to these episodes of care initiatives? So with that, Cindy, with Cox, are you there?
Yes, we have not implemented it yet on our side.
Okay. And then I have Brian.
Hi, Brian Clean from Quartz. We did do bundles many years ago with one of our provider owners. We moved away from them because we really didn't see any positive results. We're heavily globally capitated, and so we see that as sort of a better position to be in financially.
Okay. So I think that, Scott, I think I covered everybody. If there's anybody else on the phone that wants to jump in, please do. But Gina, maybe you could provide a response and maybe sum up what you heard.
Now, I think that a lot of what we talked about yesterday with Cara is number one, one administratively, are the health plans going to want to take it on, because it is a little bit more cumbersome. As it was mentioned, you have to do that post-audit payment. And it's interesting to hear that people are not experiencing the savings that possibly could be there. So I think this is really great feedback that I can bring back to Cara. So this, I appreciate everyone's feedback on it.
Yeah, and this is Danielle Cox. And one thing I guess I would add is we are on Tapestry, and we you know, still struggled to be able to administer a bundled payment through Tapestry.
Thank you. That's something that was- kind of figuring out here as we're learning the system itself. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like the administration of the program, the back-end administration of the program, kind of the cost outweighs the benefit to putting in the types of deals like this on the front end.
All right.
Okay, so I think unless anybody else has a comment that covers that issue, are there... Scott, I can kick it back to you, but perhaps there are other things folks want to bring up with First Health, or you want to move the agenda?
Yeah, I mean, I know Cara's not here, but I don't know if Gina or Andy or Paul, you guys can chime in. I'm just curious on, honestly, what's happening with renegotiations. You know, I think one of the things we had talked about with, you know, the launch of the No Surprises Act is, you know, some of these providers who have notoriously minimal discounts, you know, was it worth keeping them on and trying to move them to a qualified payment amount? Just curious if you guys have kind of looked at your, you know, your contracted providers and, you know, those providers who are in that 10% discount or less bucket, you know, are you guys relooking at kind of what your strategy is with those, and, you know, anything else you can share in terms of renegotiating with hospital-based providers like the radiology groups, anesthesiology groups, you know, what, if anything's changed, I guess, over the last few months?
So yeah. I do know, I think Cara mentioned this before. I don't know if that was Paul that was about to talk, so I apologize. We have been, that is one of the initiatives that our networks team has been doing, is looking at the contracts and trying to renegotiate with some of the providers. And I know that, I think it was a month or two ago, we actually terminated a large emergency room provider group just because the discounts that they were providing were not sufficient for the market, and they weren't willing to budge. And so we talked to several of our clients that had higher utilization there, and they were very much supportive of us terminating that provider group. So we are taking a different stance on this, Scott, which I think a lot of people are, is evaluating those lower performing contracts and seeing what we might be able to do. And then before we terminate, of course, we actually look at the utilization and talk with the clients that have the higher utilization to see, you know, how do we want to handle this? And in a lot of situations, we're going to terminate them. And hopefully that will help bring them back to the table to recontract. I think time will tell what's going to happen. But yes, we are taking a different approach when it comes to contracting, especially some of those hospital-based providers.
So this is Danielle Cox, and I guess I have a question on that. We had been advised by Clear Health, and actually I talked to some other payers about doing that, and some of the feedback we received, and we're actually in the process of kind of doing our own evaluation of this, but is that depending upon the volumes of claims for that particular provider, that they're driving that QPA amount. So have you found that when terminating them, that the QPA payments are actually that much less than what their contract was at?
That would be a car question. I'll take that one back to her because that's a really good question. I'm not sure what they're saying in that regard. So I'll take that one back and see if she has some feedback on that one.
I think the floor is open for any feedback for First Health or questions for First Health.
Yeah, just to break the silence, I'll say that I don't have any. That's
a pretty much appreciated, Jeff. Thank you.
Always welcome.
Has anyone been getting slammed with any of the gene therapy stuff or the CAR T stuff? Are we all just kind of holding our breath? I know our actuaries are holding their breath. I think we had that on the agenda when we first started this group. How do we address those kind of future costs of gene therapy? And maybe that's something, Gina, when Carr gets back, if you guys, I'd just be curious what you guys are seeing, or if there's any strategy we could as a group, pool our interests together to help try to get, make sure we get reasonable rates on those types of claims. But it's obviously a big unknown right now.
Right.
Yeah, Scott, when we looked at that, when we discussed that as an agenda item, I know that, First Health's got a number of contracts with some of those providers out there. And some are very, good contracts and some aren't that good. So, but I think what we wanted to do is we wanted to look at the data, find out where the dollars were going for the plan members that use First Health and determine, which providers had the better rates through First Health and try to get some perspective around trying to limit, channel those members to use those providers that that had better rates with First Health.
Yeah.
I believe the name of the provider that we were focusing on was Progenity. Does anybody else recall that?
Yeah, that was one of them. I remember that name.
Yes.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, there were both, again, a high volume of claims dollars going through them. And there were many or multiple plans who had, reasonable amounts of traffic with that provider.
Are people seeing more out-of-network claims now? I mean, just with employees being remote and, living who knows where? I mean, are you seeing that out of your commercial employer groups where they're populations more dispersed?
Sarah, we are definitely seeing that.
We've seen it a little bit with our own employees. I know we've let some of our own employees are now kind of scattered to work remotely.
On the First Health end, on that question, do you see among your clients any changes this year in utilization of the network?
So if I look at from December of 2020 through March of 2022, we did see, I'd say, an uptick between March and August of last year, but then it went back down to around our averages. So something happened between March and that might have been, COVID related. Just between March and August, we saw higher numbers in comparison to the claims that we received in out-of-network claims. But again, then it went back to our averages after that.
Gina, this is Sarah. Just a quick question. If we
identify providers that we would like to be approached if they're not in your network now? Can we, do we just reach out to Amy Martin with that information? Okay.
Yes. And
the question I have is, one of those members is going to a facility and the discount is in fact great overall. Is that something we can send to Amy too, to just get some feedback if there's anything else that can be done to improve that?
Yes. Yeah, so anytime that you have a concern, let us know about it. We'll go to Cara and her team and work with our local, the local markets too, because we work in conjunction together. And we'll look at, is the contract coming up for renewal? What's going on in the marketplace? Does that facility generally give discounts or not discounts? We'll even now, because luckily we have Aetna in the MEU and we can pull a lot of data and the transparency data that some of the facilities, not all of them are providing it, but we can pull that and look at that information too, and use that in contracting. So there's a lot of different components. It might not be up for contracting, but it is something that if you're coming to us and you're getting, you know, concerned about it, we'll work with them. And then they use that when it does come up for recontracting.
Okay, I appreciate it. And I think it's a provider that falls into that bucket of, they don't really offer discounts because they, you know, everybody wants to go there, but thought I'd just ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some of those boutique facilities that just won't, or like Mayo's of the world.
That's actually what I'm talking about. So I kind of figured.
Yeah. So I think everybody has the same rate for Mayo pretty much. So yeah.
Yeah. We always joke that's the easiest contracting job in the world. It's 5%.
Right. Right.
Exactly what it was too.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, they were one of our clients, still are today, but I went and visited their facilities many years ago, and they were saying even the employees don't get a big discount. So I was like, okay.
Thank you.
So Scott, okay. If we're finished with the feedback portion, now would be a good time to let our friends from First Health sign off, and we can continue the discussion among ourselves for a bit.
Rick, I did want to bring up one thing, if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I didn't know where on the agenda to bring this up, but I did want to let everyone know, because I know this question has come up in the past as to, for NSA, many of you know that we are providing a QPA. We've created a QPA product, so it allows our clients to either opt in or opt out. And one of the components of that we were not ready for was the negotiations and the IDR process. And we are moving along. We have started the internal discussions, started evaluating what is needed for that. And we will have a solution for that this year. I don't have the official date as to when it's going to start. So as we get closer to when a full end-to-end for QPA will be available, we'll share that with you. But hot off the presses. We really haven't shared this with our clients yet, but I did want to let you guys know that this will be available.
When you say end to end, do you mean through open negotiation and IDR, or just through open negotiation?
Correct. Both? We'll do the whole thing. We'll go to IDR. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And that's all I wanted to share.
All right. Okay. So I think we'll say goodbye and thank you for your contributions today, and we'll certainly be following up on all these issues. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, Scott, we have an open agenda item, as we always do,
for
discussion among ourselves.
Yeah, if anyone has, wants to air any dirty laundry about First Health, feel free. really, for me, I just want to make sure that these meetings are meaningful for folks. So, this is a shorter meeting. And, I think last fall we had some very good meaningful discussions. Now I just want to make sure that we're mindful of everyone's time. So I want to make sure we're addressing items that people have concerns about. So I just want to make sure, I'd ask for people's feedback on that. If there's other topics you want to bring up or you want First Health to bring up, I know data is a big part of this, which, you know, I think that'll be a big part of our next meeting. But if others have feedback, we're all ears. So I'll open it up to anyone else who has thoughts they want to share and kind of what this meeting looks like in the future.
I just have a question about, and we're not First Health clients today, but we're interested in a relationship with them other than PHCS. And on the QPA side of things, are all the plans here, are they using First Health to process QPA claims, or is it a mix?
Yeah, we're using ClearHealth.
ClearHealth. And is ClearHealth, are they using just a national database like Market Scan or Fair Health to calculate QPA, or are they using something else?
This is Cindy at Cox. I think for us, they took our actual data and they comprised our QPA from that. We're also using them, and we're for NSA as well as our out of network. So our claims go to First Health first. And then if they're not First Health providers or they're inside our service area, they go to Clear Health. Clear Health assesses for the NSA and prices the QPA. And then for those out of network claims that fall outside of NSA, they're also pricing those for us.
How are they pricing those so that fall out of your state?
They, so QPA, and then we also have some logic built in for a percentage of Medicare, like if the QPA is greater than billed charges, then I think we're using maybe like 125% of Medicare. But they worked really well with us and let us kind of set the threshold and guide. They gave us some input, but then they also guided us on kind of what other plans are doing. And I believe has made it pretty cost effective for us. And the transition was really quite easy. It was the easiest implementation I think I've ever done in the almost 16 years I've been here.
I would echo that. From Courts, we're also using ClearHealth, and it was incredibly easy. And they also, yes, used our claims data to develop the QPA funds.
Yeah, our own claims data, not a problem at all. It's the out of area, out of state one. It's like, how is that calculated? And, you know, do we want to use some kind of contracted rate, or is getting a number out of a national database like Fair Health or Market Scan a lower ultimate cost?
Can I ask, for the people using Clear Health, how are you identifying those claims in your system to send to them?
So we at Cox, we use Cognizant QNext is the processing system we use. And we have something in there called attributes. So we put an attribute on the claim showing what vendor it was sent to and the date it was sent. And then when it comes back, we have another attribute we apply that says what vendor provider it is. And we put a value on there. Yes, if it repriced. No, if it didn't. It's all done through our 837 automation and electronic process. And we are, so for First Health, we only send claims outside of our service area, and we have a 26 county service area. So we use what I'm going to call a nightly process. They use in our IT department SQL to develop it and write it. And it identifies claims where the provider's physical address is not one of our zip codes in our 26 county area. Those claims go out to First Health. We use those attributes to identify that. Then when the claim comes out for First Health, or if it's a claim that didn't qualify for First Health, they have logic written in there so that it'll go to the next step, which is Clear Health. And then we use those attributes again to identify what's been sent, how it came back. We are sending, after First Health, anything that's not First Health, we're sending all of our out-of-network providers, Clear Health is determining NSA or not NSA, and then repricing according to that and returning it in the 837. I can't remember what loop it is, but in that specified loop, they will send back a code QPA if it's NSA related. And that tells us our process to apply in-network benefits, a specific NSA remit message, an EOB message. Then the other code they send back is CHS, and that tells us it's not NSA. Then we don't, our process doesn't apply in-network benefits. And then I have another attribute that I use for senior leadership reporting so they can differentiate for Clear Health between NSA related and not NSA related.
So Clear Health, though, is taking that claims data and they're identifying if it falls into the emergent bucket.
Correct.
Okay. And do you know the parameters they're putting around that? And I don't want to take up a bunch of time here. I was just curious.
I don't know. I know they went over it with senior leadership last year during the initial discussion phase. And our senior leadership was confident that they knew the regulation frontwards and backwards and had it all lined out. And we've tested against it and found that they were correct. I've had a couple of questions. It seems like on urgent care, they are treating that as NSA, which our interpretation was urgent care wasn't a part of NSA. So I do have a question out to them about that right now.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, that describes pretty much the exact same process we have with Clear Health, and you know, almost to the letter. You know, we start with First Health and then it goes to Clear Health. They identify NSA, non-NSA. If it's non-NSA, then we had been using Clear Health as kind of a reference-based pricing out-of-network tool for, you know, again, those claims would be processed as out-of-network versus NSA, which are processed as in-network. And I know our staff, our configuration folks worked with Clear Health to set up the logic for what is NSA or non-NSA based on, you know, is it a out-of-network provider at an in-network facility? Is it an ER claim? Is it an ambulance? You know, there was all the logic was built in together for that. So, and I would echo everything just said in terms of it's gone very smoothly and we haven't had any disputes yet. We had used Clear Health for reference-based pricing about a year ago, just for maybe a pilot project for maybe 10% of our out-of-network claims. And I think our discounts were in that 55 to 60% range versus, you know, I think our First Health discounts hover around the low 30s. So, so yeah, it's been, and their fees are lower. So it was,
the First Health people off the call, they are correct.
Yeah. They've worked with Clear Health.
I don't mean it to you, but I was going to say we're currently using them to price QPAs, except we have to apply all the logic in our system and we're not capturing everything. And so it's been a battle along with, you know, we're doing a whole tapestry implementation for our system. So, I mean, there's a ton going on for our config folks. So just trying to figure out, maybe this isn't the best fit for us right now. Because again, we're having to configure all of that. We're not catching everything. So there's dollars left on the table. And I'm just curious about the logic they developed. So thank you for sharing that. That's good to know.
Any other feedback, comments, thoughts, suggestions? We're open. If not, you know, if you don't think of anything now, obviously, you know, send an email to us and we'll make sure we'll bring those up in our July meeting.
So kind of, I guess, just a follow-up question to a comment someone made earlier about that they were using Clear Health as a pilot with their out-of-network claims, and they used the reference-based pricing. Were you getting a lot of appeals on those claims?
No, we took a very conservative approach. You know, we went probably to a higher percent of Medicare than what they would have suggested, because we really wanted to minimize any member noise. And quite honestly, we said if there was member noise, negotiate it away. You know, we wanted to keep the member out of the middle as quickly as possible. You know, that being said, you know, it was still, you know, you can toggle the percents of Medicare that you want to reimburse based on geography and provider type, you know, lab, inpatient, outpatient, you know, you can do it by specialty, you can do it by county. So there's a lot of flexibility in time in terms of how you set those parameters. And we just kind of made sure we weren't overly aggressive and, you know, we didn't pay like 110% of Medicare, you know what I mean? So we probably paid a little bit more just to avoid that noise. And, you know, it worked. We haven't heard any noise. And as I mentioned, the discounts were still pretty big.
Thanks. Another question, if I may. Some of the networks like First Health or PHCS, you name, they've interpreted in certain conversations, maybe not always, that if like, for example, we rent their network for out-of-area services, that's a contract, and therefore, if we're paying QPA, we'd have to pay under that contract. I wonder if any of you all have said, no, I'm only going to contract for a wrap network, for First Health, for non-emergent services, services that don't fall under the QPA guidelines. Did you alter your contracts to say that?
We did not, but we did. We've had those very discussions. And, you know, I think it'll be curious to see what happens if that comes up in a either negotiation or dispute resolution kind of process. We had kind of the same, you know, we just, the regs are unclear on it, right? So we're kind of waiting to see how they interpret that.
Right. And then if you've got like an HMO network or a narrower network, did you take off the logo on your member card for First Health?
We did not.
Okay. Thanks. I was just curious.
I just have a follow-up question to that since we have a couple of minutes. On your narrow networks where you do include the First Health logo on the card, do you get pushback from clients or even members that have tried to utilize a First Health provider in that service area and then are upset that they can't do that?
I have not come across that as an issue. It was never escalated to me. Maybe we've had some grievances on it, but I haven't seen any. I'm on our appeals and grievances committee, so I would think I would have seen it. But I haven't heard that as an issue.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm guessing you can't see me anymore. My internet went down, but I'm still on the phone, obviously.
we can hear you okay, Scott.
Yeah, we've got like 50 mile an hour winds here, so.
Sounds like we've gotten the feedback completed. And maybe we're going to talk about the meeting schedule coming up, Scott.
Yeah, again, I don't have it in front of me, but is it middle of July?
Yeah, I have it here, Scott. So the next upcoming meetings, the first meeting, the next meeting after, is July the 14th, and it's same time. It's always 1 to 2:30. And then the one after that, it'll be in Q4, it's October the 13th. So they're typically on the Thursday, the second month of each quarter, more or less. Sometimes it's the first month of the quarter, but more or less. And those are, you guys can go online. If you go to our website, the Health Plan Alliance, and go to the meeting calendar, and you can either just put in First Health and find the meeting, or I've been sending out the links to the registration as well, so that you can register that way. And then for any of the meetings that have taken place already, we do have all the recordings there on the site so that you can go in and listen to the meetings in the toolkit online. Also wanted to, promote our, we are doing programming around NSA. My colleague, Jennifer Bosley, who's on the line with us, is overseeing that peer group and that work group. And so we do have some upcoming activities that are taking place. There's a webinar that's going to be on May the 3rd. I can put that one in the chat. So if you're interested in that, but I believe she has one, let me see here. She has one on, there's one coming up on May the 3rd, then July 12th, and then November the 15th. So again, if you go to our website, to Health Plan Alliance, let me see if I can grab the first one and I'll put that in the chat. The one that's coming up on the May the 3rd, and they're from 1 to 2 Central. So. So that, I mean, that's all basically, Scott, that I have in terms of updates and so forth. There's the one for the one coming up. The link is in the chat for the one coming up on May the 2nd. I mean, excuse me, May the 3rd. And Scott, that's really all we have on the agenda.
I'll probably have to reach out to you guys about that July 14th date. I think I'm actually on PTO then, but we can, not that it has to be scheduled around me, but I just want to make you guys aware.
You know, we can, you know, Scott, we can move the meeting if it's not good for everyone else. We can look at another date, maybe in August. July tends to be a very travel busy month. So offline, I can talk with you and Rick and we can move it to August if that works for everyone else.
We can talk offline.
About that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, Scott, that's basically all that we had on the agenda for today.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. As always, appreciate your candor and your participation. And, you know, any feedback you can give us, you know, always helps these meetings get better in the future. So keep the questions coming, comments, suggestions coming, and we'll see you guys in a couple months, 2-3 months.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.